WGN Radio, and Elise Glink joins us on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Welcome back, Elise.
Nice to be here, John.
Elise is the real estate and financial wellness expert, owner of Think Glink Media at thinkglink.com. So we spent some time last week talking about the jobs numbers. What light do you want to shine on that?
Well, it was surprising just how perfectly awful they were, and why everybody seems to be so sure that they should be four times as high as they actually were. So you probably talked last week about how economists thought we'd have a million new jobs, and yet we had fewer, about a quarter of that, 266,000 new jobs created. Mm-hmm. Where they were created is sort of interesting. Given that there's such a huge push for housing, it was very surprising that virtually no new additional jobs were created in construction. You've had the same level of job creation that you had, but that's a place where I would have expected a lot more people to take jobs. It pays well. There's a lot of work to be had, and yet not so much.
Yeah, no kidding. I wonder if that tells me a lot about the economy or a lot about economists, that they could be that wrong. Yeah, no kidding. I mean, why did not the jobs go up in home construction?
It's a real question. You know, we've had really good weather across the country for most of the last couple of months. Since March, we had that horrible, you know, January and February, very cold in the northern half of the country, lots of snow. But then, you know, March and April looked really good, and the numbers should have been stronger than they were, given how strong the numbers overall are for housing creation. So it begs the question, who's actually building?
Yeah.
Who's building those houses? But I guess we're going to find that out sooner rather than later. It could also be a little bit of a fluke in terms of real estate. But it'll be interesting to see how it plays out next month.
I think it might also be a function of, even if you wanted to build more houses and hire more guys and gals to do it, you can't get the supplies. And if you can, it's too expensive. So maybe they're not doing that just because the materials are so scarce.
Yeah, it doesn't quite jive with the actual numbers of building permits. That's spades in the ground. It's not actually, or building starts, I should say, spades in the ground actually doing the construction. But we'll have to see how that actually plays out. But the market for existing homes has stayed red hot. And for the Chicago metropolitan area, there's new numbers out that shows that some of the hottest neighborhoods are actually in the Southwest, around Midway Airport and in communities that are even further west and south than that, which is a nice change for those neighborhoods.
I guess there's some value there now, right? If the market's rising, it lifts all the rising tide lifts all boats, and maybe that's been undervalued, being that close to the airport and all.
Well, I think that's right. We're also seeing in places around O'Hare where homes are getting bought to expand commercial opportunities, and they're going to tear down some of the houses and put up different kinds of industrial office space or warehousing space. And that's interesting, too. Every time you have one of these things happen, it takes houses off the market in terms of the numbers of housing stock, and that just means we need more houses for the demand that's out there.
And mortgage rates are still attractive. They went down a little bit, right?
They actually have jumped down to about where they were in February, so not quite as low as they were in January when you hit about 2.5% for a 30-year fixed-rate loan. But they're pretty darn close to that. They're under 3% again for the 30-year fixed, and for a 15-year, they're well under 3%. So if you're looking to go out, obviously the best thing you can do is try to get a loan with the shortest loan term possible. So if you can afford it, go for a 10-year loan at 2.25%, roughly, or if you can't do that, do a 15-year, and if not that, sure, go for the 30-year, but try to pay it off faster.
Well, I think we all go back and forth on various loans that way. 30 years gets you the lowest mortgage payment, but you know you're going to pay in the long run more interest, and then you promise yourself that you'll make additional payments to buy that down. We don't all follow up on that as well as we promise ourselves. That's the problem, right?
It is, but I'm here to tell you that one extra payment a year will shave about 7 or 8 years off of your loan term. So that 30-year loan comes all the way down to maybe 22 years just for one extra payment a year. That's really worth doing.
Really interesting, comical observation about Zillow. We'll get to that in just a minute. So we talked about the jobs numbers. You have much to say about inflation. People are worried about that, right, Elise?
They are. It is interesting. It all seemed to, I think it was bubbling up anyway, but last week, or maybe it was the week before, Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger, who are Berkshire Hathaway, the heads of that, they both started making some noise about inflation and how inflation, they were seeing inflation bubble up for a lot of their different companies. And I think that overall inflation has been, you know, pretty low. I mean, for the last, I don't know, maybe 8, 9, 10 years, we've seen inflation under 2%. 2% is what the Federal Reserve Bank targets as being the optimal number, around 2. But this year, the expectation is that the inflation rate is actually going to be up about 3.5%, which would be the highest since September of 2013. Right now, it's about... it's not quite that high now. And I think that's starting to make people nervous that we're going to see runaway inflation, which could be very damaging for the economy.
Elon Musk mentioned Dogecoin on Saturday Night Live in a skit. They did a skit about what is this cryptocurrency. And the market today opened and Dogecoin fell 40%. Did you see that?
I saw that it fell. I think that Elon Musk, I saw the cold open and thought that he did an okay job. I don't think he should leave his day jobs, plural.
Yeah. Yeah.
But as a market forecaster, I think that he should be a little bit more cautious. And this is something he's been cautioned about before from the SEC, is making comments and statements that move and shake the market. He should be a little more careful about that.
Tell me about this. People would rather browse Zillow than have sex, which probably tells us less about Zillow and more about people. But what are you seeing than that?
You know, this is interesting. This, I get all kinds of surveys that come through my desk. This one comes from Surety First. And they surveyed Americans, and they found that 55% of people spend at least 1 to 4 hours browsing Zillow a day. And it's even gotten in the way of work and personal lives.
Wait, John. No, hold on. Do that again.
1 in 4 hours a day.
Who does this?
Do you?
1 to 4. I don't do anything for 1 to 4 hours a day.
Right.
That must
well,
be people
the show.
That are,
you do your show.
Barely. I think that must be the subpopulation of people that are looking for a house. That's a lot. But still, keep going. I cut you off. Finish that thought.
No. It's interesting. They say it is not just people looking for a house. It is everybody in the country. Now, it would need to be more than people looking for a house, John, because if you look at the numbers for Zillow, the traffic numbers for Zillow and its sister site, Trulia, 100 plus million people a month go visit those sites. And we know that even in the very best real estate year, only between 5 and 6 million houses will be sold. Like houses,
right,
and condos and townhouses, right? Total existing property. Add in another 1 million new construction property, and you're looking at around, at the most, 7 million. So why are 100 plus million, and it's really the number is closer to 200 million if you combine everything. What are 200 million people doing looking on Zillow?
It's kind of real estate porn, isn't it? You remember the SNL skit about that, which was pretty spot on, too.
It is. And it's interesting because, you know, this Surety First, you know, really, I think they've gotten onto something. And I do think the real estate porn thing is one thing. More than half of respondents, though, have missed an important deadline because they were browsing Zillow. And more than half of them have looked up their boss's houses on Zillow.
Wow. That's kind of like looking up what your gym coach made. Remember when you were in high school? I don't know. My kids were able to do this. It wasn't available when I was in high school. But since school teachers are public employees, you can look up what all of your teachers are earning online. They go, really? Mr. Smith is making $84,000 for volleyball? Are you kidding me? But there's that kind of information out there. What is happening with the national eviction moratorium? Does that stay or is that going to go?
Yeah, it's really interesting, John. You know, a federal judge ruled last week that the CDC, which said because of the pandemic, nobody should be evicted from their home, and they put in this moratorium. They went to court. Some owners of property went to court, and the judge said that the CDC had actually exceeded its authority in saying that they couldn't get in the way of commercial activity. And so this judge, Dabney Friedrich, of the District Court of District of Columbia in D.C., he wrote that while the Public Health Service Grant, or the question was, does the Public Health Service Grant grant the CDC the legal authority to impose a nationwide eviction moratorium? It does not. And so he said that the ruling, which the moratorium is supposed to be in place until June 30th, coming right up, but it should be vacated immediately. And so it looks like it was going to end anyway, but I think it might be ending sooner.
I suppose that's a private transaction that a lot of people can resolve themselves. I was talking to somebody last week off the air about how they weren't paying their rent in a timely manner or not in a full amount. And their landlord understood. They were getting their own kind of moratorium, right? So if the government can't impose that, and maybe it's time that they don't, that doesn't mean that you and your whoever's you're renting your property from can't come to some agreement, right?
Yeah, I think that there's definitely an agreement that could come into place. There is so much financial help out there for people who can't pay their rent, and really not a lot of tenants are taking advantage of it. And I know you've talked about it on the show. When I filled in for you, I've talked about it. But if you can't pay your rent, instead of just stiffing your landlord, you can apply for federal help, county help, city help, and state help in the state of Illinois to help find some funds that will give you, you know, the $5,000 or $10,000 that you owe to catch up on the rent. And then the landlord will be able to pay his or her mortgage on the property, and we don't even have to worry about moratoriums. So please, if you are in that situation, there is help available.
Lastly, just talk to me briefly about the stimulus bill. What's the status of this thing?
Right.
The infrastructure bill.
Right. The infrastructure bill, super interesting. Originally, the Democrats said, I don't know, $1.6 trillion or $2.6 trillion, whatever it was, and the Republicans said no more than $600 million. And now the latest news today is that McConnell is at $800 million.
Billion.
He seems, $800 billion. Thank you, John. Right. The billions and billions of our lives now, yeah. All confused. So it's gone up quite a bit, and we'll see where it goes over the next couple of weeks. But what's really interesting, John, is that the vast majority of Americans like this infrastructure bill. They like what the Democrats are doing. The polling all seems to be very in favor of more help, not less. And that's going to be a problem that the Republicans will have to come to terms with.
I think that the problem is they called it an infrastructure bill out of the gate. If it's broad enough that it includes things like broadband, which isn't nuts and bolts, but that's logically a part of the infrastructure of America, then call it something else other than infrastructure. It so very much, Elise, reminds me of the problem with global warming, right? They should have called it climate change out of the gate, because on every cold day, they'd say, well, I guess we don't have global warming. Yes, we do, and it's causing the climate to change. That's the point. So they called it the wrong thing out of the gate, the same way they called this thing an infrastructure bill, when they should have said it's a something or another bill.
Well, naming has never been the Democrats' strong point, John.
I guess not.
It's all marketing.
We've learned that today. Elise Glink knows a little bit about that. Real estate and financial wellness expert. Visit thinkglink.com. Thank you, Elise.
Thanks, John.
On the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN, Catherine Davis joins us, associate editor, chicagoinno.com. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, John. How are you?
I'm pretty good, but then again, I don't run base camp, so it's easy for me to say.
Yeah, no, I totally know what you mean. Base camp has been in the news cycle the last couple of weeks for not the greatest reasons, but, you know, just to catch up you and sort of all the listeners, you know, base camp came out with a controversial new policy a couple weeks ago, asking employees not to talk about politics or social issues at work. And a lot of employees were feeling upset by this new policy and took to social media and were talking to reporters about, you know, why these new policies seemed unfair. And then last week, employees started resigning, and the founders actually ended up coming out and making an apology. I think they started to see the real impact of their decision around the new policy. And we're sort of feeling the realities of, you know, employees don't have to work at a place that they don't feel listens to their concerns.
It was like a third of their employees quit or threatened to, right?
Yeah, I think by our count, at least 19 or 20 employees quit. And, you know, Basecamp is a relatively small software company. They only had about 57 people prior to the resignation. So losing about 20 people is pretty significant for a company of this size.
Refresh our minds. What does Basecamp do?
Yeah, so Basecamp makes workplace and organizational type software, you know, to keep track of projects and to-do lists and, you know, has team capabilities so that everyone can contribute to the same list or calendar that they're working on.
One of that just says something about the viability of those employees. That is, they can get work anywhere. I know a lot of people who work at companies that issue memos that they don't agree with and they don't like it, but they don't quit their job. A lot of us just don't have that luxury, you know?
Yeah, you know, the interesting thing about Basecamp, though, is that, you know, after employees started voicing publicly their issues with the new policy, the founders actually came out and said, if you don't want to work here, you don't have to. And they offered employees pretty generous severance packages. You know, if you had been at the company for more than 3 years, you got a 6-month salary package. You know, and even if there wasn't turmoil at your company, I mean, that's like still a really attractive option, right? So, you know, it's not like these employees are just quitting completely losing their income. You know, some of them are going to get 6 months of pay. If you've been with the company less than 3 years, you get a 3-month package. So, you know, that sort of adds some context to why, you know, perhaps employees were more open to leaving their roles.
Are they going to? That is, did the apology work? Are they going to lose 19, 20 employees?
It seems that way. I haven't seen evidence that employees are changing their minds about this because, you know, the company isn't reversing the policy. They're saying, hey, maybe we should have gone about it differently, or we should have, you know, communicated this differently to employees and the public. But they are not, like, rescinding the policy altogether, which I think is, you know, still a deal breaker for a lot of these people.
I think it's a deal you can't keep. Again, refresh, it was they don't want you communicating or talking about politics. And whatever the and the definition of that is not clear. And where and when wasn't clear to me either. Like, okay, not on company email, not on the water cooler, but what about on my Facebook page? What if I say that Joe Biden's good or bad or something like that? How do you even begin to manage that, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I spoke to Jason Fried, who's the founder and CEO, 2 weeks ago when all of this first happened. And he was like, you know, we don't want to discourage our employees from talking about these issues on their own time. But while we're at work, we're not discussing it. And we're not doing it, you know, on the company chat email or chat programs. You know, when they introduced the policy, they were saying, we want to focus on software again and not continuously have these sort of, you know, internal disputes over politics and social issues.
Well, then I'm coming at it from the outside. We can leave this topic for now, but I I don't know how disruptive it was. If it was a big deal, maybe they had to say something. But I think most of us, even at this radio station, some of us feel one way, some of us feel the other. We're all pulling on the same rope. And we kind of put our nose down and go to work every day. Talk to me about Cohesion, what that company does. Why are they in the news?
Yeah, so Cohesion is a relatively new Chicago tech company that caters to the real estate industry. So essentially, they make software and mobile apps so that tenants can monitor the foot traffic in their buildings and, you know, control temperature across several floors pretty easily. And on the tenant side, it also allows, you know, if you worked in the Aon Center, you could use this app to, as a mobile key card, to get into through the turnstiles and up to your office and whatnot. And recently, you know, they just launched a new service aimed at reducing COVID transmission in offices. So it's essentially an air quality management system. They have sensors that monitor air quality in different parts of a building. So they're measuring things like CO2 levels, volatile organic compounds, humidity and temperature in a given place. And if those quantities are too high, the software will use artificial intelligence to automatically communicate with the building's heating and cooling system to increase airflow and thus, you know, decrease the chances that COVID is spreading in a given room.
It's the kind of service we didn't used to think about, isn't it? But I suppose that's right. Vital these days. And give me just a minute on this. There's another sort of pop-up grocer in town, right?
That's right. So there's this new grocer in Wicker Park called Pop-Up Grocer. It's actually a New York startup, but essentially they bring 30-day stores to cities across the nation. They've been in New York and Los Angeles and Austin, Texas. And it's not a traditional grocery store where they're selling fruits and veggies. They're more selling consumer packaged goods, so snack items and breakfast items. But they'll be here for 30 days. It opened at the on April 30th and will be open through May 30th.
Pop-up grocer. Okay. Nice to hear your voice again. Thanks for the expertise, Catherine. We'll visit next week.
Of course. Thanks, John.
Catherine Davis is the associate editor at Chicago Inno. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Here is Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. A Rolling Meadows-based insurance brokerage firm is in talks to buy a portfolio of assets from Aon and Willis Towers. The deal involving Arthur J. Gallagher and Company is reportedly valued at $3 billion. Cranes reports an agreement could be reached in the coming weeks. The parties have not commented. The city of Chicago will pay for nearly $60 million for new roads and other infrastructure at the site of the former Michael Reese Hospital. That's in the Bronzeville neighborhood. The investment is meant to kickstart the first phase of a plan to turn the property into a mixed-use campus. Developers behind the 48-acre, $3.8 billion project will go before the Chicago Community Development Commission later this week, seeking approval of an agreement to buy the city-owned property for $97 million. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
More market news from Steve Ruxton.
Something rather unexpected happened last year to your finances, and you probably don't even know it. A new report done by Rice University professor Joyce Beebe says credit scores went through the roof.
The whole thing has to do with the relief package and the government policy.
She says people use those stimulus checks to pay off debt. Meanwhile, outstanding consumer loan balances dropped a big 12%. In return, the average FICO score increased by 8 points. She says a question going forward will be whether consumers use this credit to buy durable goods like cars and appliances, which helps out the economy. Professor Beebe says even she was surprised by the data given the pandemic's impact on the economy and job losses.
People expect, well, the credit will go down, but that's not what happened this time.
And Beebe says a lot of this has to do with those government payments.
The Federal Reserve did a study to ask people, how do you use this payment? Over the three waves, the people who use it as debt payment increased.
Now the business of food. Prices have been spiking for both recycled paper, an important source of wood fiber for the packaging industry to make boxes, and corn, used to make the glue that holds those containers together. Who knew? According to Bloomberg, there's a trickle-down effect. Food companies had to pay more for packaging, and in many cases, those higher costs are passed on to you, the consumer. It's National Shrimp Day, recognizing America's favorite seafood. Eating shrimp may actually help lower your levels of triglycerides and that bad LDL cholesterol. That's good news because today is also National Lipid Day. The day brings awareness to abnormal levels of cholesterol or fat in the blood. Eat hearty and healthy. That's a look at your money in the business of food on 720 WGN.
WGN Radio News comes your way in about 9 minutes in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Amy Guth gets us there. Let's start by talking about toys. There's a cynic in me about this Mattel story, but before I get to that part, why don't you tell us the story, Amy?
Yeah, I'm curious to hear what the cynical part is, because I have a qualm about it myself. So essentially the story is this, that Mattel wants to recycle your old toys. They're launching a program called Mattel Playback, and they're going to recover and reuse materials in old toys for future Mattel products. This is part of a commitment that they made earlier, saying that they want to use 100% recycled, recyclable, or bio-based plastic materials across absolutely every one of their products by 2030. That's a pretty ambitious goal. When you think about toys, there's a lot of plastic in them. So essentially, consumers can participate. If you have a Barbie, if you have Matchbox, if you have a Mega Toy, you can go to the website, print out a free shipping label and some packaging, and send it back at no cost. I think it'll be interesting to see how people respond to this. I mean, my initial thought was like, well, sometimes people want to keep their toys, or sometimes they're collector's items, things like that. But they also noted that the pandemic created an unanticipated surge in demand as parents were trying to work at home while also, you know, entertain their children and keep their children learning at home. A lot more toys got purchased over the last about, you know, 15 months or so to keep kids occupied. So maybe some of those toys won't be those old collector's items that we have in the attic, but maybe some of the more recent toys that kids maybe just got bored of quickly.
Remember the rush on puzzles and some toys were hard to acquire. And my first, and I will take this back after I tell you what my cynicism was. They're just trying to sell new toys. If we give them the toys we got to go buy some more toys, grandma, grandpa. But, but they are sort of committed to a recycled, biodegradable toy brand in the future. So they're trying to get that stuff off the streets and out of the garbage dumps, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly kind of the initiative they're going with. They're saying, look, we're going to manufacture these toys either way, but our goal is, and 2030, that's just right around the corner. Yeah. That's not too long to completely redo a company that really relies on plastic. So they've really committed to this really ambitious goal. So they're looking to even try to prevent some of these toys from even getting to the landfill in the first place. So they're, hey, we originated this plastic. We'll reclaim it and make this into new toys.
And you go to their website, I guess, and print out a label, and then you can just, for free, you can send your toys to them, whatever the Mattel toys are.
Yep, that's exactly right. So if you've been thinking, it's going to be a bunch of drama to like have a big garage sale or go through this, or maybe put it on eBay, print it out from the website. It's free. You know, you can just drop it off at the shipping center and off it goes.
What about this Ford recall? What's going on here?
Yeah, this is an interesting one. So Ford is recalling 661,000 Explorer SUVs in North America. The piece in particular is called the retention pin, and it could loosen and allow the roof rail covers to completely detach from the vehicle. Nobody wants to be driving around and have their roof pop up. So that's what we're talking about. This recall covers 2016 through 2019 models. Notifications are going to start going out the week of June 28th. The vehicles covered in the recall have roof rail covers that are painted silver black or absolute black. You may not know that because it's covered by your car metal. So if you have a blue car, don't think you're necessarily exempt. If you happen to know what the roof rails are, that's what this would be about. But anyway, customers are going to be notified the week of June 28th. So this is more than 620,000 cars in the US, more than 36,000 in Canada, and more than 4,200 in Mexico. So this is a really large number. That's a very popular SUV. A lot of people own it. And this follows some reports to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration that that said in early 2020, 11 of the reports came in about these roof rail covers detaching from vehicles. So the agency had requested that Ford issue this recall. Ford was looking into it. Initially in November, they said they would just extend the warranty to cover this for 10 years or 150,000 miles before they agreed to the recall. But now it has expanded to that large of a recall. So if you have a Ford Explorer made between 2016 and 2019, you may want to keep your eyes peeled for a recall notice.
Rush Hospitals and BMO have a partnership. What's that about?
Yeah, I thought this was very interesting. So not the first time the two have teamed up, but Rush University Health System and BMO Financial, they're launching an institute, this initiative to improve economic vitality and health outcomes in the area. BMO has given $10 million to create this. It's called the Rush BMO Institute for Health Equity. And it's the largest ever gift in support of eliminating health disparities. So they are aiming to raise another $70 million over the next few years to build out these initiatives. And they're going to focus on four key areas. So one of them is community engagement to address social factors connected to health, like food insecurity. It's going to address research, education, and workforce development. And so, you know, a lot of hospitals over the last year have declared racism a public health crisis and have committed to improving, you know, health equity locally. And so this is a step towards that goal for this hospital system.
I saw some reporting about this last week, and I've seen different numbers that it's 13 years, but I also saw 30 years, the life expectancy. If you're in Inglewood and you go north to Streeterville, I can see Streeterville out the window, literally where I'm standing right now. The life expectancy goes from like 60 to 90 or 58 to 88, right?
Yeah, that's right. So the number that they have been leaning on is a 30-year difference in life expectancy between residents of Streeterville and residents of Inglewood. And they're really trying to shore that up, especially in light of the pandemic, when we saw some health disparities, some disparities in the healthcare system disproportionately impacting Black and Brown communities. And so this is a step that Rush Hospital is trying to make in that direction to try to shore that up so that the life expectancy is the same for everybody.
I'm trying to think of some of the things. We have 30 seconds left, but I would imagine young people getting shot on the South Side probably has something to pull that number down. Diabetes, just general health care, it's stunning, though, that it could be that stark over the course of, what, maybe 10 miles, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, part of that too is access to healthcare. When we look at safety net hospitals closing, they're underfunded. If you have to travel miles and miles and miles to get care, it suddenly becomes much more difficult. If an ambulance has to go much further to get somebody in a life-saving situation to trauma care, it's certainly a different outcome.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Let's talk again later in the week. Thank you, Amy.
Thanks so much, John.